The following program is a presentation of the FlyPod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
My name is Elbert Lewis Jr.
And I'm Alan McIntyre. And together we welcome you back to our show, Black on Black Commentary. And the intended audience for our show is the black community, yet others are encouraged and welcome to tune in. Each and every one of us has a unique bias when it comes to change or certain subjects. And I should warn you that the content of our program episodes is probably unlike anything you've heard coming out of the black community.
Again, I'd like to welcome you back and encourage you to keep an open mind and think for yourself. If you're not African American, we hope you'll listen in to our show as well. Our program is intended to educate our listeners and provoke serious thought. Each of our episodes will deal with a different topic of importance. Are you ready for some open and honest black on black commentary? Great, because it's time we talked.
Obviously, there's been a lack of progress in the black community. What do you make of that?
Let's discuss them point by point. Number one, I believe a huge problem in the black community is ingrained feelings of inferiority. Slavery of the mind, some people would describe it that way. And it's not as obvious as you might think, because a lot of times it's sort of masked by the bravado, the anger, the going to extremes in the way that some black people dress, and going to extremes and how they express themselves, like rap music and other forms of entertainment. I genuinely believe that there is a large percentage of black people in this country who in the depths, their innermost depths, feel inferior. And they kind of resist the white standard for that reason. And that's manifested in a lot of different ways. Like, you hear a lot of kids say...
Well, let me interrupt you real quick.
Okay, go ahead.
What is the source of that inferiority complex? Tell me that.
You might be surprised. I think that it mainly comes not from interactions in a day-to-day with white people. I think it comes from the government. Think about this. Every time the government comes out with statistics about some facet of American life, what do? They state the white number and then they state the black number. Generally, the black number is an indication of things that are worse. And so you hear that time after time after time, and it's, you sort of get to the point where you might believe in every facet of America.
Hold on. Let's press pause real quick. I'm with you. But tell me this. If those numbers are true,
mm-hmm.
I look at it like this. You got two ways you can go. You can look at those numbers and develop an inferiority complex, or you can look at those numbers and want to do something about it. Okay?
Absolutely.
So if individuals are looking at those numbers and they're developing an inferiority complex, why? Why aren't they choosing to do something about it as opposed to developing a complex and kind of drawing back into a corner, if you will, and really becoming irrelevant?
Well, I think mainly it's a matter of character. Some people are just have a combative personality.
Press pause.
Let me finish my thought, though. If you have a type of personality where you're combative and somebody tell you you're this and you're that, a certain type person, they're going to rebel against that, and they're going to prove to you that, no, I'm not this that you're claiming I'm, and they're going to show you. Whereas other people who have a different character might be susceptible to that and might accept it and may not resist it. If you had children, one is more athletic than the other, are you going to tell this child that's less athletic, well, you're not as good as your brother? You're going to compare him to everything his brother does.
No,
well.
You don't do that. No,
you don't do that. You build that child up. Even though you in your mind you know Jimmy is more athletic than Johnny, you don't tell Johnny that. You don't tell him that at every opportunity Jimmy is better at this.
Well, I believe at some point in time Johnny can catch up with him.
But I'm saying that this is the situation that I see in this country in very subtle ways and sometimes not so subtle. This society, led by the government, tells black people that in comparison to the white population, you're not as good or you're worse. And a lot of black people internalize that.
Now, I will agree with a lot of people that black people are told that. And that's the Democrat Party narrative. They're constantly telling them what they're not capable of doing and how they need to rely upon them in order to move forward in this society.
I agree
with
that 100%.
So, you know, that's what they do, you know, and they're good at it. But let me just say this. At the end of the day, the problem in the black community is drugs, crime, the lack of education, and parenting. I think you get a lack of education because of bad parenting. Mm-hmm. Because first and foremost, you get educated from your parents through teaching you as prior to going to school, through your developmental years, ages 1 through 6. So these parents are not developing these children in the home, and then they go to school totally unprepared to be good students. Then once they're in school, these parents are failing to keep a good eye on these kids and monitor their progress in school. You know, year to year, make sure that they're doing what they need to do every day. Are you doing your homework? Let me see the test results, et cetera, et cetera.
But that's a subset of the whole.
Well, I think, but hold on now. What I just described to you, I said parenting. I said a child from 0 to 6. Mm-hmm. That's the beginning.
Right. Those are the formative
before all
years.
These other things come into play.
I agree.
So if you mess up the beginning, everything falls apart. So that's the reason why I always say you are your own worst enemy. That's the reason why I will not excuse the black community by saying, oh, you're so depraved and et cetera, et cetera. No. Well, what I like to talk about is real reasons. Now, we can talk about things that we can argue are psychological and whatnot, but I don't really care to talk about that because I'm looking at things that I can see, feel, and touch more so than anything. I see crime. Mm-hmm. I see abortion. I see drugs. I see those things. I see kids not being watched, allowed to run rampant in the streets late at night when it's a school night. That's what I see. Those are things that we can see, and those are things that we can go out and stop and change and do something about right now. Mm-hmm. We can sit around and argue about what somebody owes us as far as, for example, reparations and stuff like that. Okay, but let's say we did receive reparations, which I believe we don't deserve. But let's say we did receive reparations. How long is it going to take? If we start the reparations debate, how long is it going to take? Because a lot of people think that's the end all be all. If we just get reparations, we'll be all right. You know, we can change how we parent. We can change how we police our communities. And we can say no to drugs now.
Well, I think that comes down to my second point, and that's the resistance among certain classes of black people to upholding the white standard. If you look at the way or the environment in most middle-class black and white communities, you don't see the trash. You don't see kids hanging out in the corner, school-age kids hanging out on the corner. You don't see street crime because it'll get reported. And so a lot of these urban problems is because the people in those communities do not uphold the white standard. There's a resistance to that.
Now, well, I wouldn't call it the white standard because there was a time when the black communities did adhere to those standards. But if you call it a white standard because of today in 2013.
Well, that's the attitude
you
today.
You see that standard being more consistent in white neighborhoods?
Right.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. I know that hurts for a lot of people to hear that. But in 2013, I just want to make this clear. It is the white standard.
Right.
Because
And you talk to young people.
But if we go back 70 years ago, it was just the standard.
Right. The middle-class standard.
Exactly, yes. Yeah, so.
But now if in certain urban communities, if you see a black kid and he's taking his books home, he's doing his work, he's participating in his education, he's acting white.
Oh, he's a nerd.
Right.
Yeah, right. And how he's acting, that's amazing. But, yeah, elaborate on that and what that means to you when you're doing the right, responsible thing and somebody tells you that you're acting white.
Well, I can only go back to my personal experience. When I was in school, I was a pretty good student. And it wasn't so much then as acting white because I was pretty much in a segregated school system until high school. But there was that resistance to being smart, to learning something, to be able to interact with the larger community in a certain way. And a lot of black people see that as, I don't know, fraternizing with the enemy, so to speak. There's this adversarial attitude among especially poor black people towards the larger white community. And I guess that's the legacy of slavery and Jim Crow, which they don't know anything about, the younger people. It's mainly through what they hear from our so-called black leaders. And I think they are the ones who perpetuate a lot of this attitude. And they are the ones who are primarily responsible for this anti-white attitude. Because the younger people now, they don't know what real discrimination is.
Exactly.
They don't know what it's like to have separate bathroom facilities or anything like that. All they know is what they hear. And the people that have the mic are our so-called black leaders. Those are the big voices out there, and that's what they hear.
Well, you said interacting with the larger community. Unfortunately, in the black community, when you talk about interacting with the larger community or assimilating, they want to refer to you as a sellout. And that is absolutely ridiculous. And what bothers me is it's gotten so extreme now to where in a lot of black communities and black society, they act as though the European culture doesn't really offer anything worthwhile. You know, they've gotten so extreme with it to where anything that has to do with the European culture, they want to bash it.
And even if it's beneficial.
Yeah, exactly.
To the community as a whole.
And what I say is, in America, America has a lot of different cultures that have influenced America. So I'm certainly not about to look down on one particular culture because it's politically correct for some people to do that. And unfortunately, in the black community, it's politically correct to kind of look down upon things that descend from a Europe. You know, that's something that we have to change because I think that's racism. That's racist.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying about this anti-European, white, Anglo-Saxon influence. But there is, I think, something beyond that. It's that groupthink, that sense of tribalism, that sense of being circling the wagons and acting like we're under siege. And I think that's my third point. It's that tribalism, that groupthink, acting like we're being oppressed and attacked when if you make the effort to educate yourself as much as possible, stay off drugs, stay out of prison, don't have kids you can't afford or don't know how to raise, then you can pretty much live a life that is comparable to any middle-class white person in this country and not be a subject to any more discrimination or anything else.
You know what I like when you said under siege, because the black community, majority of us, we act as though we are under siege. And the so-called black leaders like Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, you saw it with the Trayvon Martin incident.
Right.
They came out and said, black men are under attack. Well, you damn right, you stupid bastard. We are under attack. But no, I get so pissed off because, check this out. We're under attack, and we're under attack by our own community.
Right.
No, because it's black-on-black crime that's killing the black man. It's black women that are aborting black babies. You know, so I get so sick and tired of these people. I mean, they really have to go, and they have to go now, because all they do is contribute to the destruction of the community, and they benefit. Right. They benefit financially while destroying our community. So their heart isn't in it. So, and we really have to get away from, as a matter of fact, the black community needs to stop looking to or for a leader. Let's start there. It needs to become more of an individual-based mindset in the black community. We can get away from this tribalism that you referred to, et cetera, et cetera. But, yeah, I get so upset. And, yeah, we're under attack. We're under attack by black criminals in the black community. We're under attack by a bad decision making, and that comes from within the individual. People make a lot of bad choices. And if we take the time to look at it on an individual basis, if you get a group of black people together, they can definitely show you how the community has been exploited and this and that and how we're under attack. And this, they'll tell you all about that. Take that same group of, say, 50 people individually, one by one, into a room. Ask them about their life, the ups and downs, and then really talk about the downs. And then ask them who's responsible for the downs. I guarantee you. And then if you dissect the downs, let's say they don't even admit that they're responsible for the downs. It's, well, I'm a product of my environment. But okay, fine. Then let's break down the particular downs in their life that they were talking about. For example, somebody might say, well, I had a drug problem. Okay, how is somebody else responsible for that? You see what I'm saying? We've got to get all the way down to the core of this thing, and we've got to begin to teach people. We've got to teach the black community that you are your own worst enemy.
And
I hate to say the black community, but as a matter of fact, we've got to teach black individuals that you are your own worst enemy.
And you just stole my third point, which is personal responsibility and character. Character counts. Unfortunately, for black people, the people who are not as successful as the productive black people have a built-in excuse, and they are encouraged to use that excuse, and that's the racism excuse.
Right.
That's the discrimination. That's
envy and all
right,
that.
Right. And but as long as they are allowed to use that excuse to play the race card in that way, we're not going to be very successful in pulling them along and elevating or having them elevate themselves in the society because they have that excuse. And then because they're so eager to use it to excuse their own failures, it sort of holds a large percentage of the black community back. You know, Martin Luther King said his dream was that we judge each other by the content of our character. Now, you can't do that if you excuse every character flaw, every mistake, every crime, every misstep in life.
On the basis of race.
Right, and blame it on racism. At some point in time, you have to take responsibility. And at some point in time, the larger black community has to hold each of us accountable for what we do and don't do in our lives. And in effect, you're going to have to pay the price, good or bad, for what you do, whether you accept the responsibility or not. But if you don't accept the responsibility, then you turn into a group of people who feel persecuted.
Let me throw this out there. I don't know. Have you been to a black funeral where it was a young black male that was dead?
Not recently.
Because I've been to quite a few of them. I've been to quite a few of them. And in every and of those funerals where the young man was the type of young man that lived in the streets, lived a violent life, often selling drugs and committing crimes and et cetera, et cetera. Here's what you find. Let's say he was a menace to the community. He was a menace to the community to some degree, to some level. But every time you get to that church and they get to preaching and talking about him, he's a saint.
He was turning his life around.
He was turning life. He was such a good young man. And you always hear that. And I'm just giving an example of how we make excuses, how we don't hold ourselves accountable. Because I have sons. I love my sons very much. But if they were in that situation, I would personally stand up. No, I'm going to do this eulogy. And I'm going to explain to you why he is there. And I'm going to give you the truth. It doesn't mean I love him any less. But I'm going to give you the truth, in hopes that somebody in there will listen and it can affect and impact somebody's life so they don't end up there. If he was bad, I'm going to say, you know what? I loved him. I raised him right, but he went the wrong way.
Right.
He wasn't a very good young man
at the
time that he died. Now, I can't tell you about other times in his life when he was a good young man. Let's keep it real. We got to keep it real like that.
Mm-hmm. We have to judge people in the content of their character, plain and simple.
Well, Albert, you know, I always enjoy our conversations, and I guess we're at the end of another episode. You know, moving forward, I kind of feel as though we got to give the people a little more.
I too enjoy the conversations. We agree on certain things, and I had a couple of occasions on this last couple of talks when I could have went off on a tangent, and I probably should have. So in the future, I think we'll explore those areas where
we disagree. People to hear our anger, you know, and our passion. I think people should hear that.
Okay, anger and passion, fine, but you just stay on your end of the table. Give us some thought, and together, perhaps we can all ensure our country's future history and have it be something we can be proud of.